Admit it. Our public debate has been reduced to reading each other's bumper stickers. Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. I made up most of them, and most of those when I was mad as hell about something. So if you hate war, empire, central banking, cops, Republicans, Democrats, gun grabbers, and status of all stripes, go to LibertyStickers.com, and there's a good chance you'll find just what you need for the back of your truck. Own a bookstore? Sell guns at the show? Get the wholesaler's deal. Buy any 100 stickers and they drop down in price to a dollar a piece. You can spread the contempt and make a little money too. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. Just in time, we got Nathan Fuller from BradleyManning.org. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Great, how are you doing?
I'm doing real good. Thanks for joining us today. Oops, I gotta turn you down there a little bit. Hey, so what's the latest from the Bradley Manning court martial?
Well, we're on a little recess right now and going to resume on Monday at Fort Meade, Maryland. And we're going to hear from other people who worked with Bradley as an intelligence analyst and at Fort Drum before they deployed. And we're going to hear about what he was expected to do as an intel analyst. And we just heard a little bit about that last week. On Wednesday, we heard from his supervisors as intel analysts. And we learned that the government has been trotting out this Excel spreadsheet that Bradley made with all of the Iraq war logs in it, these significant activities. And they're trying to show that he was preparing lots of information to be giving to WikiLeaks, that he was harvesting information for WikiLeaks, essentially working for WikiLeaks. But we learned that he was actually just doing his job as an intel analyst, and he was one of the most organized intel analysts they've ever seen, and he was actually just researching to try to determine patterns of violence. And once he saw that and collected that, months later, he decided that that was something that the American people needed to know. And then he later gave it to WikiLeaks. But,
wow.
But it certainly contradicts the government's claim that he was working for WikiLeaks.
So now, in the government's claim, this is from their opening statement and or direct questioning of their witnesses? Can you elaborate?
Yeah. In their opening statement, they talk about this Excel spreadsheet that he made, that he was essentially just harvesting information, was their phrasing. They're trying to show him as someone who's just working at Julian Assange's direction and just preparing all this instead of doing his real work. But it turns out he was just doing great work. He was a junior analyst, but he was providing more information than more experienced analysts. But it was once he saw those patterns of violence and these dozens of atrocities that he decided the U.S. people should know about it.
Mm-hmm. And then now this was refuted by the prosecution witnesses under cross-examination?
That's correct. David Coombs asked about the various assignments that he was expected to do, and his supervisor said that she essentially asked him to do this. She expected him to create the spreadsheet. And so that really rebuts the government claim that he was not doing his job.
Absolute. Well, I mean, unless I'm missing something here, it sounds like you're describing complete incompetence on the part of the prosecution here. Have they not tried to falsify their own case to make sure that they're not being made a laughing stock up there?
I was honestly pretty surprised to hear it, considering it was a government witness, and you would think that they would have known that by now, but they didn't seem to care about that in their opening statement. They just wanted to paint Bradley in a certain light. And we also got the revelation that another revelation that rebutted government claims. The government has been saying that Bradley should have known as an intel analyst that WikiLeaks is a site that foreign adversaries would go to. But that same supervisor was asked about specific websites that America's enemies go to, and she never mentioned WikiLeaks. She's saying, you know, oh, we're supposed to know generally that they go to all sorts of sites on the internet, but the only specific ones she mentioned were social media sites. She said Facebook, Google Maps, and she never mentioned WikiLeaks. So there's no real justification thus far anyway for thinking that Bradley should have known that WikiLeaks was some sort of conduit for the enemy.
That's funny. And now, you know, I meant to follow up on this when I talked with Marcy Wheeler on the show the past 2 days in a row, actually. I still never got around to really getting this clarified, but she had written something on her blog that you may have seen about some kind of document that, you know, regardless of what anybody may or may not have told him at any training mission or whatever, training session or something, that there was a document that seemed to imply in a way that maybe the bad guys would look at WikiLeaks. But then that document was sort of self-refuting in a way, too. But I never really got my handle on that. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, Marcy wrote a great post on it, and it's a 2008 Army Counterintelligence Special Report, and it purports to delve into the issue of WikiLeaks as a conduit for the enemy. But it's, as she says, it's actually pretty ambiguous. It says, it's just something that we should essentially look into, that it could be used, but it's certainly not definitive, and it's certainly not justification for the claim that Bradley knew that enemies would be using it. And the defense, as I've mentioned before, is going to bring witnesses to talk about how WikiLeaks was really understood as an open source news gathering information website. And Bradley was an all source analyst, and so he was expected to use a wide range of sources and keep an open mind and use research a lot of different websites. So there's yet to be any clear evidence that that WikiLeaks is some conduit to the enemy.
Right. Well, and as part of his story when he pleaded guilty to some of the charges here, as far as the actual facts of the case, where he said that, he tried to contact the Washington Post and the New York Times, and they never got back to him, so he went ahead and went to WikiLeaks. I wonder, has the case by the prosecution and the judge, has it been set up in such a way where are they going to have to confront the question of, well, what if he had given it to the Washington Post? And the Washington Post had published information based on the WikiLeaks, and Osama bin Laden read the Washington Post. I mean, upon them trying to claim that Assange is not a newspaper publisher, which would be one thing, he's a James Bond villain, which is something entirely different, or what?
I certainly hope that does get explored in this trial. The judge has asked previously, would you try Bradley Manning the same way if he leaked to the New York Times? And they said yes. And so that's a pretty dangerous precedent to set. And so I do hope that they're going to have to confront that.
Well, that's a precedent that hasn't already been set, right? They've never gotten away with prosecuting somebody. Or have they gotten away with prosecuting someone for aiding the enemy, for giving something to the New York Times on that narrow of a frame?
No, I mean, this is what's so dangerous about Bradley's case, is that it would set a precedent and essentially criminalize whistleblowing, turning the internet into a conduit for the enemy is not something that we want to establish.
Okay, so the one government expert witness failed to identify WikiLeaks as a place where Al-Qaeda likes to surf. That's fun. And then the second one is, Bradley Manning was compiling this Excel sheet. It must have been just because he was an agent of Julian Assange doing something other than journalism. But then, oh, no, it turned out his commanding officer requested that he carry out that task. Oh, okay, fine. Anything else debunked or anything else really notable this week? I know Lamo the Rat testified. You want to tell us the highlights there?
Well, so David Coombs, the defense lawyer, essentially just went through a lot of the chat logs to confirm that a lot of what we knew already, which was that he trusted Adrian Lamo and that he was good intention, but a little naive at least, or at least idealistic anyway. And so it was pretty emotional to go through that, but it didn't bring a whole lot new because it was basically confirming the chat logs that we had read before.
Right. Although, that's only for those of us who've gone to Wired and read the chat logs, but that's pretty damn important in this. He's the prosecution witness, and they're up here saying here he is aiding the enemy, and the prosecution witness is having to admit that, well, his problem was he's such a good kid, he naively thought he could change the world for the better by doing this, or something like that,
and
right?
And so, exactly, and so Coombs asked him flat out, is there anything to suggest that he is not loyal to the U.S., is that he would be have any anti-American sentiment or things like that, or that he expressed any interest in trying to aid the enemy, and Lamo said no, because of course that there's no proof of that, and if you look at Bradley's statements, it's the opposite. He wanted to inform the public and could have sent this information to Al-Qaeda or foreign government for money or for help, mm-hmm. But he didn't.
Well, did they talk about that specifically? Because that's in the logs, that Lamo, after he was already in contact with the government, apparently, the way I understand it, started trying to tempt Bradley Manning and say, hey, why don't you sell this stuff to the Chinese or the Russians instead of passing it on?
And they reviewed that, and Bradley's response was that information should be free.
But did Coombs and Lamo tangle about that on the witness stand there?
Well, it wasn't so much tangling because Lamo doesn't really have proof to refute it. So they just reviewed what was said, and that was that that he believes information should be free, that, you know, we deserve access to this information because it's not going to harm anyone, and it's about our government.
Yeah. But so Lamo confirmed that, yep, I tried to tempt him. Why don't you sell it to the Chinese? And he told me, hell no.
Well, he wouldn't phrase it that way, but yeah, that's basically what happened.
Excellent. I mean, because before it was just chat logs as published by Wired, right? Who knew?
Right, and so now we have direct confirmation.
Right, by the prosecution witness.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, all right. Well, listen, tell us about the effort to crowdsource and fund. Is it covered? It's not. It's only partially covered. Only the very beginning of the transcription is paid for at this point. Am I right about that?
That's right. So we have multiple stenographers that are in the press room now, but they still do not have official credentials. The government right now still says that they're not a media organization and therefore don't deserve credentials. But others have been willing to provide their press passes so that they can get in. And yeah, they have transcripts up at the Freedom of the Press Foundation, and they're only partially funded so far. They cost about $2,000 a day, and I believe they've... Yeah. They've raised $70,000 total, but they're going to need some more money. So you can donate to them at pressfreedomfoundation.org.
Okay. And now, man, you're going to have to either change the URL or change the title of the foundation so that they're the same thing. You're driving me crazy.
The
pressfreedomfoundation.org.
Right, and it's the Freedom of the Press Foundation, but you should be able to find it.
Right on. Okay, hey, listen, it's so important, the work that you're doing. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you having me. Thanks.
That's Nathan Fuller from BradleyManning.org. Oh, and you know what? I screwed up and confused him with Trevor Tim again, didn't I? That's not his website. The press freedom thing.
Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the journal of the Future Freedom Foundation. Every month, Plumline Individualist editor Sheldon Richmond brings you important news and opinions on policy by heroic FFF President Jacob Hornberger, hard-hitting journalist columnist James Bovard, and others from the best of the libertarian movement. The Future of Freedom tackles the most important issues facing our country, from the bankrupt and insane welfare and regulatory states, to foreign wars and empire, the dismal state of our economy, and ongoing assaults on civil liberties. This society needs peace and freedom for prosperity to prevail. Subscribe to the Future Freedom in print for just $25 a year or online for $15 a year at fff.org/subscribe. And hurry up, because this summer they'll be running my articles about the wars in Libya, Syria, and Somalia in the Future of Freedom too. That's fff.org/subscribe for the Future Freedom. And tell them Scott sent you.
Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org.
Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager whose site is unique on the web. Subscribers are allowed a window into Mike's very real main account and receive announcements and explanations for all his market moves. The Federal Reserve has been inflating the money supply to finance the bank bailouts and terror war overseas. So Mike's betting on commodities, mining stocks, European markets, and other hedges against a depreciating dollar. Play along on paper or with real money, and then be your own judge of Mike's investment strategies. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com.
Oh, man, I'm late. Sure hope I can make my flight.
Stand there.
Me? I am standing here.
Come here.
Okay.
Hands up. Turn around.
Whoa, easy.
Into the scanner.
Ooh, what's this in your pants?
Hey, slow down. It's just my...
Hold it right there. Your wallet has tripped the metal detector. What's this? The Bill of Rights?
That's right. It's just a harmless stainless steel business card-sized copy of the Bill of Rights from SecurityEdition.com. There for exposing the TSA as a bunch of liberty-destroying goons who've never protected anyone from anything. Sir, now give me back my wallet and get out of my way. Got a plane to catch.
Have a nice day.
Play a leading role in the security theater with the Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com. It's the size of a business card, so it fits right in your wallet, and it's guaranteed to trip the metal detectors wherever the police state goes. That's SecurityEdition.com. And don't forget their great Fourth Amendment socks.
Hey guys, I got his laptop.
Over at AIPAC, the leaders of the Israel lobby in Washington, D.C., they're constantly proclaiming unrivaled influence on Capitol Hill, and they should be proud. The NRA and AARP's efforts make them look like puppy dogs in comparison to the campaigns of intimidation regularly run by the neoconservatives and Israel firsters against their political enemies. But the Israel lobby does not remain unopposed. At the Council for the National Interest, they put America first, insisting on an end to the empire's unjustified support for Israel's aggression against its neighbors and those whose land it occupies, and pushing back against the lobby's determined campaign in favor of U.S. attacks against Israel's enemies. CNI also does groundbreaking work on the trouble with evangelical Christian Zionism and neocon-engineered Islamophobia and drumming up support for this costly and counterproductive policy. Please help support the efforts of the Council for the National Interest to create a peaceful, pro-American foreign policy. Just go to councilforthenationalinterest.org and click donate under About Us at the top of the page. And thanks.